we're talking about our groups, that it should reflect heaven. I think it goes with, we are citizens of heaven. We're right here. Mm. We're just passing through. And so our heaven is our home, and so it should be kingdom before our race. It should be, yes, where, you know, we want to strive to get people who look like us, so we can learn of God's creation. I think it adds flavor into what God is doing on earth.
Well, hey there. My name is Clayton, and this is Group Chat, a resource designed to encourage and equip Rush Creek group leaders to cultivate environments for our partners to encounter God and engage in biblical community as we pursue becoming forms of the faith, united to help people find and follow Jesus. As you heard from my friend Arabia in the intro clip, she's already preaching. This is the final of our season of How Do We Engage Culture? We looked at what culture is, we looked at how culture and the kingdom values tend to overlap and how we engage it. We looked at the life of a leader, and now we turn our attention to the life of a group. Pastor Marty here says we are a church that is multi-site, multi-ethnic, multi-generational, that looks like heaven, and we believe groups should start to look the same. But there's barriers between us and that. There's our preferences and our comfort. But forerunners put kingdom over our comfort, and we partner with God who is building his family and his vision. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And for all of our resources, you can go to rushcreek.org/groups. Hope you enjoy. Well, hello there. My name is Clayton. I'm joined by Barry and Arabia. So thank y'all for joining me today. Why don't you take a few seconds and introduce yourself? Tell us about who you are, what you do at Rush Creek, which campus, and one random fact about who you are.
Wow. I wasn't prepared for that one. So I'm Arabia, and I am one of the group's admin at Rush Creek. And so I get a chance to work with all the group's pastors. Mm-hmm. So my job is very interesting in a good way. I have a 15-year-old, and so he's almost out of high school. And one random fact about me, mm-hmm, I love the smell of rain.
Oh. Today, yeah, when we're recording, it looks like it's about that to start raining.
Yeah, and just
wonderful.
And sometimes nice. I like to spray water on the concrete just so I can get that, yeah, smell.
Yeah.
Weird.
When it's hot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, my name is Barry Parker, and I'm at the Mansfield West campus, groups pastor there, and just love what I do. It's been a wonderful ride in different areas of ministry. Started out in worship and landed in groups, which just I absolutely love this area. My wife and I have been married for 36 years. And two children that are grown up, and getting one married off, mm-hmm, real soon. And so getting to be empty nesters here again, empty nesters again. I guess an interesting fact, I'm a recovering Mountain Dew-aholic.
Mountain Dew-aholic.
Yes.
I thought you were about to say Mountain Who, like you're from Whoville or something.
I did say Mountain Who, but Mountain Dew.
Yeah. I thought you was going to say mountain bike climbing, yeah, or something.
Mountain Dew-aholic. I mean, I love that drink.
How many did you drink a day?
Well, probably three prime. Or four.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Loved it. I called it the dew from heaven.
Wow, very spiritual.
That's great. That's so good. Oh, well, thank you for
holy.
That. Yeah. I've never knew that about you.
Yep, I'm so recovering.
Wow.
So
you've been delivered.
Now I'm drinking sparkling ice.
Sparkling ice.
Nope, you know,
with zero sugars.
No, and no caffeine in this one. So.
Well, that's good. I'm drinking Dutch Brothers today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cookie dough one. Tastes like a cookie in a Frappuccino, whatever, freezy thing. Well, as we get off topic, thank you all for joining me today. Before we started, I shared a video with you all about a Facebook ad ran in 2013, and this will be in the show notes for you listening. You can go and pause here and go watch that, and then come and join us back in 5, 4, 3, 2. You didn't watch it, but that's okay. We're going to keep going ahead. But this was an ad ran in 2013 by Facebook with their vision of what community looked like. It has this girl sitting at a table while an aunt or somebody is just starting rambling on, and she's just on her phone engaging in this community of Facebook. But as we look at the church and everything we've done this season of this podcast has been about defining where we are in this cultural moment and looking at the markers of our culture, but also compared to the markers of the kingdom and the values of the kingdom and how there's some similarities, but there's also a vast difference to what community looks like in the church and outside of the church, especially since we're the called out ones and we're gathered into this family. I love Scott McKnight. He says, "The church is God's grand experiment in which difference gets connected, unlike form a fellowship, and the formerly segregated are integrated. They are one." And so we've now become this family that's about commitment and not just compatibility or comfort. And so at Rush Creek, we have this saying that as we wanted people to engage in biblical community and partner with us, that we're a multi-site, multi-generational, multi-ethnic, and diverse church. And we as a groups team started saying our group should look like that as well. Our group should look like a picture of heaven. And so when we say that, what do we mean when we're saying groups should look like heaven?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about John's revelation and chapter 9 and 7 where he just says, you know, I looked out and I saw every people, tongue, tribe, nation. I saw it all and this unity. And that's what I think about. And then I really quickly then go to Acts chapter 2, you know, where you've got people who have come to Jerusalem from all over the world. And they're all different. They just go down this litany of different types of people that are there. And they're doing life together. They are have everything in common, it says. And so that I guess those two instances I'm seeing into heaven, but really how it was expressed in second chapter of Acts.
Yeah.
And man, how I would love to see us experience that as a church together in these living rooms around our community.
Yeah, I like to pick it back off of your response about like in John, and that gets me excited when it says every tongue, every tribe, every nation. And I think that excites me. I think that with God's character, how we are different shades of color, that just plays into who God is, like far as in his creativity, like we are his creation. And so when you know, the question, what do we mean when groups should look like heaven? I think it should be every age demographic, every race, every skin tone, and not just this one particular tone. And I think it's putting away our biases or what we, that imagination of what we think, like if we want to be in a predominantly circle of that age range that color. And you know,
Much easier, isn't it?
It is. Like more comfortable.
Everybody thinks like me, everybody looks like me. It's
I can assume you might vote like me and have the same hobbies as me.
Yes.
And roof of the same team as me, you know, the Saints.
Oh, my goodness. You know,
people are very strange and different.
Look out, Cowboy fans.
But I do
think. What are these? I'm just messing.
But I do think, like, when we're talking about our groups, that it should reflect heaven. I think it goes with we are citizens of heaven. We're right here. Mm. We're just passing through. And so heaven is our home, and so it should be kingdom before our race. It should be where, you know, we want to strive to get people who look like us so we can learn of God's creation. I think it adds flavor into what God is doing on earth. And one question I posed was, you know, what do you do when you have a church or a campus that's predominantly one race, and how can we form groups that look like heaven? And it's not always about race. You know, we have different age demographics, but I think it's still seeking the Lord and saying, okay, God, even for me as a African-American woman that's in her mid-30s, I still have the pleasure of meeting with others who are younger than me, older than me, that's a different gender than me. And I think that is just a start of it, of what, when we form these groups, it's like, I don't have to have another black person to be in that group with me, but just knowing that I have another sister in Christ, regardless of what their race and age is.
Yeah.
So that's the beautiful thing about the kingdom is, First Peter, he reminds us that we're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possessions, that you may declare his promises of him who called you out of darkness and into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. And once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. I mean, this is a beautiful gift of the gospel, that we were separated not only from God, but from each other. We were at odds with each other. But now, as Scott McKnight, as I read earlier, and as Peter, it's, we are now this unlikely fellowship of people. I mean, I love Lord of the Rings. It's like the unlikely fellowship that they now like bound together. And when they don't have unity, you see the falling throughs of that. But we're called to be, we're from go from segregated to integrated into this family of believers that might not look like us on the outside, might not vote like us. Or now we still have an essential belief. We say in the essentials we have unity, but in the non-essentials we have charity. We have some theological convictions that we hold, especially around the gospel. But there's some things that we can be a little bit more open-handed with when it comes to those things. But there's barriers to a group looking like heaven. And we kind of mentioned a few of them, but what are some barriers that will keep a church from being diverse, to keep a community from actually looking like heaven?
Well, there's just so many, you know. We're so particular and we're so drawn to comfort.
Oh, yes.
And so just getting with people that, man, like we talked about earlier, think like me. They like to share the same Mountain Dew together. I mean, but, you know, it's so, I try to encourage people when they think about groups, or especially even leaders, when they're stepping out into starting a group, to think like, I know it's more difficult to be with, you know, if you're a 70-year-old, it's more difficult to be with 20-year-olds or with children running around, but there's a richness, there's a beauty to dealing with the distractions of maybe having children running around the home. There's a beauty and there's a richness to the experience of not just having people that are 70-year-old in your group, and we all do and enjoy the same.
Do you think it's difficult just because of maybe the stereotypes that we have of different generations, you're somebody who is a baby boomer might be looking at a millennial or especially Gen Z now and be like, we're just way too different people. But the struggles are the same thing. I mean, every single one of us all experience primarily the same struggles, just they outflow a little bit differently. But do you think there's a difference in generational gap that we're like, I don't know if I could connect with somebody who is not in the same life stage as me?
Definitely, I agree. I think, I love where you says, where you say we let our preference lead our faith. Mm. And I do. I think that we have this stereotype that could be a barrier of forming groups and getting a chance, what Barry said, to honor and appreciate the richness of someone who is in a different life stage as you. Mm-hmm. I think political affiliation is a barrier that keeps us from forming these groups. And that's, again, that's letting our preference lead our faith. We putting our preference before Christ. And I think it's an idol. You know, when we're saying that that I don't want to join this group because they are a Republican or they're a Democrat or, you know, they voted for this person, they voted for that person. Yeah. And that is a barrier for us.
Yeah, preferences believers. Are, they're okay to have. Mm-hmm. We just can't moralize them.
Yeah,
I was listening to a pastor, John Tyson, up in New York, and one of his sermons recently, he said, it's the adult that can live with 1,000 different preferences and not get their way. It's a kid that demands their preferences are always met. Mm. And in the episode that we talked about emotional and spiritual health with Gary and Stan, we kind of hit on that we can sometimes think we're further ahead and be more spiritually mature than we are. But if we're looking at, I always have to have my preferences met, we still might be living out the kid in our life to say, I demand that this looks like this for me. And that's always going to be a barrier if you're looking to get your preferences met. What about comfort? Do you think it's just comfortable, more comfortable to be with people who look like you, maybe have the nuclear family with 2.5 kids? I don't even know if that's the average anymore.
I think about it, you know, I think about it. And so even a group that I have that's in my home, And we're all, you know, not dealing with young children mm-hmm. now, and would love to shake that up.
Yeah.
You know, like, because we are, like, we're comfortable. It's easy, you know. Yeah. But needing to have diversity in many different ways. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the challenge of that. And, like, wait a minute, guys. We got to learn how to deal with that in a loving,
yeah.
unified way.
Comfort can actually be like a barrier to growing in faith and as a community as well, because it stops you. Brett McCracken, in his book Uncomfortable, says there's a reverse correlation between the comfortability of Christianity and its vibrancy. When the Christian church is comfortable and cultural, she tends to be weak. When she's uncomfortable and counterculture, she tends to be strong. I think the same with our faith. When we get comfortable in our faith, we start to lose the power, because we're meant to live in the margins of society in the world, and to always kind of be on the edge of this adventurous life with Jesus. I think of, Rabbi, when you look at the disciples that Jesus kind of picked, and you look at somebody like Simon Peter and Matthew, two completely different mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. What do you think was going through their heads when they're like looking at this Jewish fisherman is looking across the table and sitting right across from him is a tax collector who's probably like robbed him of his livelihood through that moment. What do you think he's like thinking at that moment? Why am I with this guy?
Yeah. I think Peter, we see him, well, we read about him cutting off the ear of the guard. So I'm pretty sure Peter was the feisty one looking at Matthew up like, what is he doing here? And, you know, but even their differences, even their preference, I think you see Christ at the center of it, yeah. and still see Christ's work being done, you yeah. know. So yeah,
that's the thing, like they didn't choose each other, but yeah. but God chose them, and they probably would not have any other interactions except probably when it's time to pay taxes or get collected. And so when the preferences and shared interest in sports, whatever team you want to root for, are set aside, worldviews or philosophies, and they're replaced by the common goal of to follow Jesus together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in our group agreement that we journey after Jesus till we look like Jesus. We want to become foreigners of the faith. That's our common goal. So that means to live out his way and to join in the work of inviting people to his kingdom, to exercise our gift, to embrace unity. So we set those aside in the family of God, and we don't let the barriers of comfort or preferences move us. And so when we think about these types of groups, how can groups that look like heaven form us into more compassionate and loving and engaging people in the world around us?
Well, I think we need to lay down what we feel are our rights to mm-hmm. a lot of different areas, and really open our life up. Because when we're doing life with others, we definitely have to shift, and we have to relax and go, yeah. hey, what they're saying or what they believe or how they look at life, how they look at the world, I've got to have some freedom to just relax in that. Yeah. And, you know, I've experienced that of building a strength in me to accepting people that are different mm-hmm. than me.
Yeah.
I got a guy in my life that's in a group that I lead.
And one of the 14 that you lead?
Yeah. and it's interesting because I was looking, I don't have that many like diverse people, but I do. I have so many diverse people. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about this group I meet with on Saturday mornings. One of the guys in the group is from Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. The other guy is from Australia. Ooh. And then the third guy is a New Yorker who is an atheist Jew.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
I mean, I was like, I didn't even think, you know, I never stopped to think about Puerto Rican, Australian, and a New York Jew in the room together. And I was like, oh my goodness, that is incredible diversity, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And this guy does not, the one guy is not a believer in Jesus.
Yeah.
And he's an atheist, but he loves what he sees.
Yeah.
We throw him off like, this is not what I thought Christians were about. That I could be accepted and share my view even on the biblical standpoint, mm-hmm. and you guys still appreciate, you love me. I mean, he says it almost every week. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And so, but Vic has helped me grow in just loving him.
Yeah.
And not always accepting everything that he mm-hmm. believes,
yeah.
but loving him despite our differences.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the love of God being shown, that the love of God is indispensable and inseparable from the love of our neighbor. Yes. And when we look at our neighbor and God hates the same people that we hate, we have made God into an idol of our own lives. Yeah. And so to rub shoulders with people who are not even believers is such a encouraging, informative experience to show, okay, are we gracious and merciful and compassionate, yeah, to meet people where they're at in their stories? Because that's, yeah, what God has done for us.
That's right.
He met us where we're at, not where we think we should be.
So
and has
true.
Loved us into the kingdom.
Amen. Yes.
I love the aspect of family. And,
yeah,
you know, that book that was written back quite a while ago, Helderman wrote it, about when the church was family.
Yeah.
And recognizing the depth of what that Jewish tradition, mm-hmm, expected out of family, and then for Jesus to stand up and say, here, look at here, this is my mother, my brother, yeah, and my sister. He sent shockwaves, mm, to that community, to that group of people, like, what are you saying? That these guys that you have a spiritual connection with have such a deep connection that outweighs even the physical family. Mm. And that really spoke to me, that,
yeah,
we can have this intense relationship through the Spirit of God.
Oh, yeah.
And I just absolutely love what Jesus brings to the table as far as our connection.
Amen.
And our brother and our sisterhood. You know, it really should speak to us deeply,
mm,
and how we sacrifice and love each other deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we're saved into this family. We're not saved to be just individuals by ourselves. And that's what I love about Dallas Willard. He said, becoming like Jesus is always profoundly social. You cannot keep it to yourself. Anyone who thinks of it as merely a private matter has misunderstood it. Strictly speaking, there's nothing just between me and God. For all that is between me and God affects who I am, and that in turn modifies my relationship to everyone around me. My relationship with others also modifies me deeply and affects my relationship with God. And so those relationships must be transformed if I am to be transformed. Like, it's a social thing. We're,
yeah,
saved into the family of God. Not, yes, there's a personal aspect of it, that God does identify and know you. He knows the number on your head. He sets you on a new identity. He calls you a son and daughter. But he doesn't just save you and then just like keeps you alone and isolated by yourself. He saves you and brings you into this a family, this picture of adoption, saying,
yes,
now we have to cultivate this kinship with these, mm-hmm, people who you would never in your, before me, probably had a relationship with, have a deep relationship with. But now you do.
Yeah.
So, Rabbi, how have you seen and how do you think these types of groups in being more diverse church and community that looks like heaven can form us into more compassionate and loving people?
I think that it sets the tone for the world. I think like being diverse, and like Barry, you mentioned more so where the nationality, where people are from,
mm-hmm,
and diversity is beyond, is, you know, is so much, so many things out there that makes us different from one another.
Education, finances.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways we can break each other up, can't we?
Yes. And I think in this season of my life, like, you know, it's learning from you, Barry, you know, you very young, and, you know, I get a chance to learn from like having a big brother in Christ.
I love that.
You know, and,
yeah,
you know, and share, you know, my thoughts, or just, you know, and just have a way to just engage in, you know, conversation and take something from you in this season. So I think in this season of my life, God has matched me and connected me with people who look different than me, age is different,
mm-hmm,
than me, life stage is different from me, and I get a chance to pull from all of that and learn and see God's love. And I think that, like I say, it sets the tone for the world to see who Christ is, and,
mm-hmm,
you know, it doesn't say it look like this way or one way or the other, but I think it defies the odds of what people say is a family, what people,
yeah,
say is a unit. And so
I'm so glad to have, you know, people of different nationalities in my,
yeah,
life, and get to hear, you know, get to hear their story, the view of the world through their eyes, mm-hmm. because it is much different than mine. And I think there's so much to learn being able to look through different lenses and be friends and know, recognize the differences and where our backgrounds have formed us. But we all, the funnel is like so narrow when it comes to Jesus. It just brings us right together.
Yes, and I think that I just think that even our upbringings, you know, even you can have someone in the same race as you, it's still going to be different. You're still going to bring something different to the table. And I think that's the beauty of just submitting to the Lord and accepting someone that's different. It takes the focus off ourselves to say that it's about me when it's not. It's about Christ.
Yeah. So. Yeah, one of our earlier episodes, we talked about one of the values that the world is wanting is to be accepted and loved. But it's usually wrapped up in, you got to look this way and believe this way and act this way, have the same philosophy. But with the kingdom of God, we can really have that acceptance fully. We see a common theme that runs in our culture is we want people to be, we want toleration and equality and unity among us. But then there's not that. There's still just separation. But the church, this is where that can happen. Mm-hmm. Because we're not bound because of a worldview or a philosophy necessarily, but we're bound by the person and the work of Christ together.
Yeah.
And coming into that kinship. And when we rub shoulders with people who believe differently than us, it also strengthens us and challenges us to say, do I really know what I believe? Sometimes we can be skeptical of having friends. I know when you that are outside the faith. I've always instituted ministry. I used to see this trend when somebody would come to know Christ. They were like, cut everybody out of their old life who did not know God because they didn't want to fall back into that life. And then you kind of just get comfortable. You don't know a lot of non-believers because you maybe in your workplace you don't talk much about your faith, and so you can assume that they're non-believers. But you like cut all those people out. And so you're not really challenged in your faith.
Yeah,
and so when you sit with somebody who's differently than you, you can be challenged in your faith.
Yeah.
Like with your New York atheist Jew friend, who probably knows the Old Testament better than anybody sitting in that group.
Yeah.
Well,
it's just, just the opportunity on a regular basis to get with a group of guys at like an Einstein where and we have, you know, we'll have two African-American brothers there. We'll have a Hispanic dude there, a 20-year-old Hispanic dude there. Then you'll have a 70-year-old hippie there, you know? And I just wonder, the world is looking in, going, what is going on in that circle?
Yeah.
It's such a testimony to the world that God is able to break through those barriers.
Yeah.
And we can love each other deeply despite our differences.
Yeah. I think when he's talking about to the church of Corinth about the structure of how a church time should look, like a gathering time should look, he's talking about doing it in a way that's intriguing to those that are outside looking in. Because these would be like in courtyards, people would be walking by, they would hear this singing and this praying, and they would see this group of people that was both slave and free, Jew and Gentile, all mixed together, and they're like, something is different about it. That's intriguing to me. And that's still happening today when you walk into an Einstein bagel, when you drive and you park all along the same street blocking in some of your neighbors, the people around that home are noticing there's something going on there every week at this time.
Yes. It's what a sign it? To the world.
It's a sign that there's something out there that's...
It just creates that little curiosity for the human. And that's enough to spark, what am I missing?
Yeah.
I agree. In a world that makes you choose which side you're on, I think picking Christ helps that. It picks, because we have that common thing, and not that Jesus is a thing, but we have just had that common interest, and it's Christ.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Barry, I love watching you interact with people. You have an inviting personality, and I think we as believers need to show the world that we're not, our race, our color, our age, is secondary to Christ. And I think that you show that in your conversations with people. You're leading that. And that, and so I feel like people want to be around you. People want to share with you and not care about, oh, he's older than me, or he's younger than me, or he a different color than me. But I think that you show that in your joy, and you show that with others who are, their theology is different from you. But you don't.
I don't know what to say to all that, but thank you so much. It is such a joy, really is, to be doing life with so many people. And I want to encourage people to invite more people into your life. Now, there's joy in that.
Now, I know Barry, and he is connected to a lot of different communities and has a lot of people in his life. But I do just want to say his season of life is different than you might be listening.
Absolutely.
And so and he invests where he's at, and I think he would tell you the same thing. But that's where that comparison comes. Like, well, sure. If you have four or five people that are that don't look like you, it has a different story. Get to know them, invest in them. That's whether it's 4 or 40. Know your limit, and that's
smaller
okay.
Smaller is better.
Smaller is better. But I just want to say, I know Barry. He would echo that as
yes.
well. Don't.
Do not oversaturate your, you know, your time.
Yeah.
Time
know
is
your margin. Time
you
is
need
so
to have those relationships and be open to more.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's where going back and listening to our emotionally healthy episode about how to say no so you can have more margin, so you can have and become a more loving person. And this is what the church is meant to be building towards, a community that looks like heaven. And it has to take baby steps to get there. Mm-hmm. And so inviting people into your life that might not look like you, starting to open up your group to people that are outside of your life stage. Because we're very grateful for what God has done in using that season to get us connected. But always knowing he wants to take us another step further. And so when you're connected with some people who are just in the same life stage, like if you're all having kids under the age of 3, you're all running the same type of schedule and your bedtimes are the same, but having somebody who might be older who could watch the kids one evening and give you a break and to go the second mile, we say exceed in our group agreement that second mile should become second nature, which is just living a generous life with people where when you're outside and have people who are both younger and older outside your generational age and life stage, there's wisdom learned from, but there's also passion from the younger generation as well. There's so much benefit from seeing people who are differently than you, and especially their stories when you take time to get to know them as well. So what would be your final words to our group leaders to about that groups look like heaven? What encouragement would you give them if you had a final word to them?
It's a great question.
Very.
I would just say lean into being open to diversifying your group, because there is such value and growth. And I love that word richness. It's a richness of life. Jesus said, I've come to give you life and give it abundantly. And you see Jesus really breaking through all the boundaries, the gender. In that one story of the woman at the well, breaks through this cultural and racial and gender that world was very strict on. He just breaks through it and has this conversation with the Samaritan woman at the well. And what a model for us to break through all the things that could possibly separate us. So make your life open to more diversity and more people that are different than you.
Yes, I echo that. I love the story with the woman at the well.
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
I think that's a really good story.
Yeah, because he breaks through so many different things in one conversation.
Yes, he does. It's like the Jews had no dealings with the Samaritans, and they knew that. You talk to a woman, like so many.
And even religious, they had different places they worshiped.
Yes.
And he said, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
You're all going to be worshiping me.
But for me, I think I love, encourage people not to lead with their preference, but lead with faith. Be open to what God is going to do in that circle, in that relationship. Be open and just curious on, God, how is this going to help me love you more? I think in seasons, and I think that when people are in our lives, it's because God put them there for a reason and a purpose. And don't be so closed off because that person is in a different life stage than you, that you dismiss it and say, no, they don't fit my MO, or they look a certain way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that look can, you know, hinder a relationship. That look, or our, what we're seeing someone through the lens of our flesh, we can,
be way off.
Yes.
We will not call that one right. No, very often.
And we can miss out.
We can miss out
on what God is doing. We can miss out on a blessing of a friendship and a connection. Yeah,
that's so good. Yeah. Be open and be curious. Two great words and reminders. But to do that, Pastor X is a pastor that is sometimes referred to on Through Right Now Media Studies and others. He's a pastor in the Middle East, so we can't know his name. But he looks, and he was talking with somebody recently about the Western Church, and he says, we value comfort and convenience and control in the Western Church, but in community, it needs to be uncomfortable, inconvenient, and not in control. And a good church is more than just a social network where we're in control of the people who are around us, curating that environment for our own peace and security and comfort. What people will be the less messy for me to interact with. It's a sense of control there. But it should be a place of transcendence, of space and silence, of devotion and richness and depth, bringing us, when at its best, in contact with people who will never think of as our friends. Because we all come to the same table and drink from the same cup of Christ. We come to the same family. And in our ever customizable, carefully curated, personalized world of social media, going all the way back to the app of Facebook that can give us an appearance of connection. The church is a community built on commitment over and above compatibility and comfort, because as we said, it's a family, and that family should look like heaven. And so from the encouragement of both Barry and Arabia, be open and be curious. So release your control and allow God to expand your curiosity to welcome people into your life that may not look like you or believe like you, but be a blessing to both you and the people that you're trying to reach. And also a message to the world that they're accepted and loved and have a place and value in the kingdom of God. So Barry and Arabia, thank you both. I appreciate both of y'all and the work that y'all do and just the impact that you'll have on my life and for our leaders today. So thank y'all for joining me today.
Thank you.
Always. I really looked forward to this, and thank you for inviting me
and Arabia
to this. Yeah.